Greetings and salutations. I'm Ryan McNeil in Toronto, Canada, and you are listening to Volume 10 of In Between Days. It's the offshoot of the regular matinee cast that I used to put out with some degree of frequency, but I've fallen off the wagon lately. I am trying to get it back up and running, and never has there been a more opportune time than this past week when I was actually asked to attend a panel on podcasting as part of PodCamp 2013 here in Toronto. Somebody who's been quite a booster to this show and an inspiration to this show for the last year, Anthony Marco. He's the host of both TVA podcast and Best Episode Ever. He gathered a few of us to talk about podcasting, about entertainment, and podcasting in general before a sizable room of an audience. So I thought that I would put up the audio of that discussion and hopefully get back to doing this series of the matinee cast. So some quick introductions. The voices you're going to hear in order are Anthony Marco, as I previously mentioned, of TVA and Retro Television. After him, you'll hear Candice LePage. She's pretty easy to pick out on the panel. She hosts Limited Release Podcast. That's a podcast about web series. After her, you'll hear me, and I'm sorry. You'll notice a little bit of nerves in my voice off the top, but I think things get under control kind of quickly. And finally, after me, you'll hear Rick Weiss, who is the podcaster who hosts The Zero Check, a podcast about music. So come on with me to Ryerson University in Toronto last week when we talked about one medium to another, the glamorous world of entertainment podcasting.
First of all, thanks for those of you who stuck around for the last one, maybe because you just thought the seat was comfortable. And
have you sat in these seats?
Fair enough. Welcome to the glamorous world of entertainment podcasting. You notice the glamorous was in quotation marks. Oftentimes, podcasting is can be a solitary endeavor. Hopefully, how many podcasters in the room right now? By the way, that's awesome.
Wow.
We found each other. You found your way through the 990 other people out there.
I thought this was about social marketing.
Untape the door on your way out. This panel kind of came together very quickly and very sporadically over Twitter. I don't know any of these people that well. Except really over Twitter and by listening to their podcasts. And I don't think they even know each other, really, which is great.
No. Yeah.
Like I say, I mean, I've met Candice at a few PodCamps now. I met Ryan really last year at PodCamp Toronto here. And Rick, I've met at a couple of podcaster meetups, and I've met here a couple times. And we all happen to do podcasts about different things in the entertainment industry. So I know I do television. You've probably read I do television. Rick does music. Ryan does film. And Candice does web series, which means her podcast should outlive us all as all of our mediums fade into obscurity. So what we're going to hopefully do is spend a few minutes each, just kind of come down the line, let everybody kind of tell you what they do, why they do it, and then maybe roundtable a bit on any comments that anyone else has to say about what the previous people have said, and then kind of throw it open if you have any questions. And when I say any questions, literally, we still have many podcasters in here. If you want to ask your tech geek stuff, like what microphone do you use, go for it. There's people in the back who are probably more qualified than I am to answer that question. But if this turns into like a shared information session, that's cool. Or if you just want to ask about anything else like that, that's cool as well. So hopefully you're okay with that. We really didn't plan this other than a couple tweets back and forth, and that was seriously about it. So I'm glad they all decided to come out when I asked them to. So we're going to start down at the end with Candice, who does the Limited Release podcast, and she can tell you what it's all about.
Yeah, so I do Limited Release with my partner in crime, who's not here, unfortunately. Just sort of quickly, we've been 2 years now, we've been podcasting, and it was about a year before that I was trying to convince Nick, my co-host, that we should do a podcast together, since we have an interesting give and take conversationally. Which I could tell by the fact that as we were in public having a meal together or something, people just stopped everything they were doing and watched us talk. So after about a year of work, I finally convinced him to podcast with me. And he's actually the one who chose what we podcast about, which is web series. specifically scripted narrative storytelling for the internet, which I think is something that is sorely lacking. Because I don't know how many of you have ever Googled web series, or how do I find a web series, or someone give me a web series to watch. You'll come up with a bunch of not very good suggestions. So yeah, every other week, two shows we review, every episode, and interviews with people, stuff like that. So it's glamorous. Web series creators, they're not Hollywood.
So we'll pass it on to Ryan McNeil, who does, is it the Matinee Podcast or just Matinee Cast?
The Matinee Cast.
Oh, there we go.
There we are.
You've taken the pod out of it.
No, it was never. It was always the Matinee Cast.
No, you decided early to take the pod out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just as you know, everybody calls it, like, you know, whatever your site is. Like, if your site is Zucchinis R Us, it's the Zucchini Cast or the Tomato Cast. Or I don't know why I'm fascinated with vegetables. But, yeah, the Matinee Cast. I run a site called thematinee.ca. All dedicated to film and film going. The motto of the site is cinematic passion and perspective, because I come at it from an appreciative place. I know there's a lot of fun out there to be had in tearing down films and nitpicking them and being snarky, but there's a lot of that. So if I'm going to add my voice to the clatter, I got to come at it at a different angle, and my angle is positivity. Perspective, just sometimes we don't take 10 seconds to think about the films that we watch. We're fascinated in just our own angle and not thinking, like you were saying in your presentation earlier, about the writer's perspective or the perspective of the time or just somebody who is not ourself if the character is something we can't relate about. So I like to talk about perspective as well. My show goes every other week. It's me and a different guest every time. Sometimes I know the guest very well. Sometimes I'm talking to them for the first time, and the only caveat is they have to be interested in the movie that I've told them to watch. Sometimes that gets some great results. Other times there's a lot of editing involved. And the show's been on the go for about 3 years now. And I think that's about my... Did I forget anything?
There's no, don't forget.
Okay, well, yeah. I talk about movies every other week with different people.
We're authentic up here.
Oh, yeah, yes, we are.
Rick.
I'm Rick Weiss. I'm one of the hosts of a show called The Zero Check. We have a story behind that name, and you can ask us about it if you want.
Hey, Rick, where'd you come up with the name of The Zero Check?
What? All right. So, here's the story. And the best equipped person to tell the story is actually sitting right over there. He's another co-host. But I'll tell it for him if he wants.
I'll tell the story if you want.
Okay, go for it.
It comes from when I was in high school, and I'd be driving around with my friends. Now, I was in high school in, you know, the mid-90s, and one of the big albums in around 94, 95 was Smashing Pumpkins, Melancholy, Infinite Sadness. So whenever a crappy song came on the radio, we'd be driving around, there's like five stations to flip between, we'd be like, do a zero check. And we'd hit every station looking for that song in particular. And it used to work. Like, it was on all the time. So we'd do hunts like that. So it became, even long after that song was, you know, no longer so popular, anytime we wanted somebody to change the radio station, listen to new music, we'd call it a zero check. So that kind of made its way into our podcast name.
Yeah.
That's called a cutaway, by the way.
Yeah. So that's how we got our name. One of the ones we were considering was the full name would be, the name of this podcast is Geddy Lee. If you listen to our first episode, you'll hear that discussion. But the format of the show is every episode we pick three albums. We each pick an album. Now we have a fourth person, too, so it's kind of becoming four albums. And we go away, we listen to those albums over the course of a week, 2 weeks, a month sometimes. It depends upon how long we go between shows. And then we get together the next time, talk about what we thought of them, and pick some new albums to do the next time. We've been doing it for about almost 3 years, I guess 2 years. This will be our third year. And lost my train of thought.
It's awesome.
It's awesome, and it definitely fits into the category of beer cast, because we just sit around, have some beers. And it's the kind of conversation we'd have even if there wasn't a microphone recording us. We have guests sometimes. One of our past guests is also in the audience here. Yeah.
Three guesses on what the theme of music was.
It was a Britpop episode.
It's okay. We were there. We got it.
Yeah. And that's the synopsis of our show.
Cool. I do two television podcasts, which are quite different. The first one I started with was called Best Episode Ever.
Woo!
One of my co-hosts in the back, who's a bit about that podcast. It's all about retro television. No show that has started later than 1989. Originally it was 70s and 80s, and then people started going back to the 60s and stuff like that. So we didn't put any start date on it, but nothing that started later in 1989. So theoretically, The Simpsons still qualifies. But no one's gone there yet. And it just started as me, doing usually between 10 and 15 minutes, just going to Wikipedia, going to IMDb, and just talking about a show that I used to love growing up. And if it was a show that I really knew a ton about, like there was a show that some of you might know, and if I mention it and you know it, this is one of those moments where the 5% of you or 10% of you who know it will be smiling your asses off. The Hilarious House of Frightenstein. Thank you. For those of you who don't know it, just go search it at some point. It was a local show. I'm from Hamilton, and it came on it was shot at CHCH, and it was this giant send-up of Frankenstein horror, and Vincent Price did the introduction, and a guy named Billy Van, who's a famous Canadian character actor, did almost every character. And it was this brilliant show. And when I went out to talk about that, there's no stats talk. And I would pull the mic in front, and I went for like 15, 20 minutes just on how much I loved this show and talked about all the different parts I love. And so I would put that out. I would do 26 episodes a year, because I seem to remember the 70s and 80s. Television shows did 26 episodes a year instead of 22 like they do now. So that's what I would do, and I'd take a break. In the third year, I started to take on guests when I could get them. But it's hard to line up people. And then the fourth year, I wanted to do something totally different. So two of the guests that I previously had, Bob, who did a woohoo earlier, back at the back of the room from Montreal, and a friend of ours who couldn't be here today, Dave Broadbeck, who's up in Sault Ste. Marie. These were two people that I had on the show previously, and when we talked, it clicked. And that's why when you mentioned earlier about the people that you can talk to and the conversations really click, that was important to me. These are the two people that when I had the conversations with, it really worked. And they were around the same age, and they had around the same sensibilities as me TV-wise. And so this year, it's all three of us, and it's a panel show, and it's gone from a 15-minute show to essentially an hour-long show, where each of us picks a show, and we come to it, and we talk about it. And we verge, I told them at the beginning, like, you know, they were kind of asking, well, what should we do, what shouldn't we do? And it's like, the show is a launching pad. Wherever we go from there, because guess what? It's going to be about old TV, because that's what we love talking about. The second television show I do is called TVA, which is EH, question mark. And it's on Canadian television. The Canadian television industry, even more than the fan side of it. I kind of lucked into that one. I dare say that I knew more about podcasting more than I knew about Canadian television, which maybe most of us in this room, to be honest with you. But there's a woman out in Vancouver named Diane Wild who does a blog called TVA, and it is pretty well known. I mean, there's not many people blogging about Canadian television, especially the industry side of it. So anytime that they greenlight a new show, or they're shooting a new show, or they're, you know, there's going to be a casting call for this new reality show, wherever. I cringe at the reality shows. She reposts it on her blog, and she gets comments, and there's a lot of industry that follows her blog and have been for years. And I asked her, do you ever podcast? And she said, oh, I tried, but I don't have great equipment, and I didn't like to do the editing or anything like that. And she'd been a guest on another podcast that I do, and she said, I said, well, if you ever want to, let me know. And this was about 2.5 years ago, and so it started up. And we're at about 124 episodes now, weekly episodes, where we talk about Canadian television. And I knew that we were onto something there when it was about the fifth week we were doing it. I don't know if you remember, there was a mini-series called Pillars of the Earth that was on about 2 years ago. This big, epic, sweeping co-production, or as we call them, co-pros, between Canada and some other country, where we still consider them Canadian content, but everybody pays for it, kind of thing. And
four Canadians. In
exactly. However, on that shoot, one of the four Canadians, it was great. They called us up and they said, you know, do you want to do an interview, talk to somebody from the show? Now, I wasn't around long enough where I felt I had the relationship to do the interview. So Dan said, sure, who you got? And they said, well, you got your choice. And there was a list of three people. And the last person on the list was Gordon Pinson.
Oh, nice.
And it's like, if you don't know who Gordon Pinsent is, he's kind of like the god of Canadian television. I mean, and so he's on the list, and it's like hell yeah, we're interviewing him. And that kind of, as soon as I saw that, within like 3 to 4 weeks, I thought, oh my god, this has opened the door. And it's not like I'm a fanboy or anything. I mean, I don't really know these people. I'm not the biggest fan. But I thought, you don't get much higher in terms of Canadian television royalty, let's say, than Gordon Pinsent. And 5 weeks into this podcast, we've got an interview with him. We're obviously filling a specific niche that nobody else is filling right now. And since then, I have got to talk to a couple of people I admire. I've interviewed Mark McKinney and Kevin McDonald of Kids in the Hall. Like, these interviews just kind of come up. They have new shows coming on. And there's all the print press out there in the world on them, and there's all the TV in the world. Well, there's not even that much TV in the world, and there's not that much print press, but there's some for Canadian television. But there's definitely not a lot where you can sit down and do a long-form interview. A great interview with, and I'm blanking on his name right now, there's a show that just started, a French-Canadian production called The Transporter, which is based on that Jason Statham series of movies. And the show apparently is not doing well, but
was a disaster in production.
Yeah, the lead actor got into a serious accident. They had to shut down production. They went through 3 different showrunners. Like, this show was, and I was talking to this guy, and I said, I am rooting so much for your show because it is the biggest underdog show in the world. Like, this show is destined to fail, but I want it to succeed so bad. And he was going, you know, English accents, like, that's, you know, that's really nice. And it's like, that's honestly what it came down to. And so it's great to be able to blog about something or to podcast about something you love. In the case of the Canadian television, I've come to love a lot of aspects of it, but I just got into it because I loved podcasting. And again, conversations with Diane seemed really easy. And if you find somebody that you can have a good conversation with, it doesn't matter what you're talking about. So that's the two TV ones I do. Go ahead.
Sorry, it's funny, Anthony. Your measure of success is the quality of interview, you know, interviewees. Meanwhile, in the web series world, every single day we're being like, we get emails like, "Hey, our show just started. Want to interview us? Want to interview us?" From everybody.
Yes.
Everybody under the sun wants to be interviewed in the web series world.
They're screaming.
Yes.
For press.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, though, despite that, my measure of success is when we interviewed Jane Espenson.
Yes.
Yeah.
For people who don't know who Jane Espenson is, roll the credits.
So Jane Espenson was one of the writers who worked very closely with Joss Whedon on Buffy. I don't think she worked on Angel, but she also worked on BSG, and she currently works on Once Upon a Time and a number of other things. But in the web series world, she created Husbands, the series, or co-created it with Cheeks.
Yeah.
That's his name, Cheeks.
one of the neatest stories that I got from the TVA podcast just happened this past week. Diane is actually starting to get called on to in Vancouver. There's a lot of shows that shoot in Vancouver, and she's actually moderating panels for the Writers Guild out there because she knows quite a few of the writers. And so she had the one that she did on Arctic Air, which is a show that's gained some popularity. It's, trust me, the sad part is I know the ratings better than I know the shows from doing this podcast. The ratings have dipped a bit. But somebody sent an email to her through the podcast email because they thought that she was somehow the showrunner for Arctic Air. And they said, "I strongly object to the use of the polar bear in a recent episode of the program. I will no longer be watching this program. Further to this, I will not watch performances by the cast and other endeavors, as they obviously do not support animal rights. This is a disgrace to the network and your ethics."
Oops.
And Diane went, "I don't have anything to do with the show." I'm wondering, I know that you go to, now, have you always gone to TIFF, like every year? Or is this just something that's become more of an issue for you over the last couple years since you've started doing this?
TIFF kind of sucks because they're a little bit too big for their britches in terms of press. There's a lot of people out there who would love to write about the hundreds of films, and not just the 30 or 40 big Hollywood releases, which we're all going to watch in the coming months, but there are, you know, small films that come here from countries from all over the world, small documentaries, short films, a lot of Canadian films that get next to no coverage from a lot of the people who descend on Toronto from other places. TIFF, unfortunately, does not take advantage of the just mass amount of people who just want to see these films, like don't have the coin to pay $20 a ticket to see some of these films, which they may or may not like, because you're going in very blind, very, very blind to TIFF, who would love to just see them and talk to the people involved and spread the word. So they're kind of tight-fisted when it comes to their press. Just about every other film festival in Toronto, and there are a lot of them.
Yeah.
There's like the Green Planet Fest and Hot Docs and Midnight Madness. After Dark. Thank you. And they go on and on and on. Every week there's another one. They are all happy as hell to have you and just get the word out. So Hot Docs is probably the best example that I get, because I get to interact with more filmmakers, see more movies, and you know, not have to pay out of pocket to do it.
Right.
So that I've been doing for 3 or 4 years, but I've been going to TIFF and that whole experience for 12 years now, which is great because it's usually when my podcast and my written work spikes, because I'm talking about stuff that people haven't seen yet.
Right.
And there's usually one title that just for some reason, like either there's an actor in it or something that has a following. And that's usually when my thing goes on. The cool thing as well about film festivals is usually that's when the podcast becomes much, much more casual. I think of everybody on the table, I'm the one who puts the most stupid amount of work into my show. Like I edit it after the fact.
Hey, how do you know, buddy?
I
put days into every single podcast.
I'm authentically making a supposition.
You're authentically right about ours.
There we go. Yeah, I've heard.
Yeah.
But no, the cool thing about doing it during festivals is it's just put the phone down on the table and start talking for 15 minutes. And it's part of it is just because during a festival, there's no time to produce anything. So that is the one little cool side effect of doing a festival.
And I noticed that it seems to be a badge of honor on your podcast, because I do listen.
You're the one.
I know. I've said that to many people today, actually. I said, oh, you're the one who listens. It's a sense of pride when you manage to capture a film that nobody else has captured. It's like you're kind of laying a claim to it. Like, we're talking about this film and nobody else is talking about it. See,
it's weird. I feel that that's actually working against me.
Well, it works against you, but...
No, because I have people who, like, they'll see what I'm going to be talking about in that show, and they're like, oh, forget that. I haven't seen that movie. I'm just going to wait until I see it, and I'll come back and listen.
Well, I'm not talking about for your numbers. I'm just talking about the sense of personal pride.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, I, you know, I'm like,
screw
yeah.
I couldn't care less about them.
As long as
I enjoy what I'm doing, really. I don't really know. Okay.
Yeah, no, it is nice when I find something because I like to tell other people about it, but that happens so rarely.
Now, with doing the show, is you got 4 people now.
Yeah.
You're always talking about usually albums, music that's older, generally, or some stuff new. Like, do you have a set date? Because I know when I talk about television shows on Best Episode Ever, I go back, and I know you talk about some retro albums. But do you have any set date, or it's just bring whatever you want to?
It's whatever we want. So... just by the nature of our age group, we tend to pick a lot of things from the 90s, early 2000s, but we've had Beatles albums from the 70s. We've had things that were released the week before that we just one of us bought and decided to bring it up.
Is part of what you bring to it this idea that I'm going to drop this cool new music on these 3 guys?
That's part of it. We all kind of have different musical tastes, and... That's, I think, why we enjoy doing it, is because it's a chance to expose our friends to different music. And that's the reason we started recording it, is, you know, maybe there's some people out there who will listen and they'll discover some new music because of us.
Cool.
If Craig's like, oh, I'll choose this one, Steve's going to hate it.
Yeah. I did that once, too.
See, but and I was going to throw out an example there, and I was afraid to, because I'm afraid of pissing off people.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Do it.
Yeah. I once chose a Pink Floyd album just to piss him off.
What? at this point, seriously, hands up. Throw any questions that you have. Oh, yeah, we actually got a couple. Cool.
I have one. I'm going to be starting podcasting soon, and I'm wondering what are the biggest unexpected challenges that you faced as you were getting your podcast.
Is there anyone you want to? Everyone can chime in. But is there anyone you want to start with? Anyone want to start?
I have a lot of trouble writing show notes. So we release the episode on Libsyn, but then we also have our own sort of home. So we release on Libsyn, and then I would write sort of an accompanying blog post, which sometimes takes 2 weeks. Like, we're about to release a new episode, and I just blogged last episode, like, 2 days ago. So it's, yeah, talking is easy. Writing about it is more difficult.
For me, the challenge comes from the guest. I know all of my guests to some extent. Some of them I only know, like, as a writer. Other people are close friends, and I have no idea what they're going to bring to the table. Some of them are great. They can just go, and there's very little cutting involved. I had one guest who I just think I caught him off guard by telling him I didn't like a movie that he loved, and he just didn't know what the hell to say. So my editing skills got a workout. No. It was a property, I'll put it that way. So, like, if you go after, like, a film that rhymes with Scary Lauder, and somebody's a big fan, they're gonna have a hard time with that. But that's my biggest challenge, is just somebody different every time. Sometimes I have chemistry, sometimes I don't, and just working with it.
The biggest challenge I found was before we started the show. My friend, who isn't here today, who is a co-host, we'd been talking about starting a show for a while, and we couldn't come up with a format for it. And once we had that format, then it was fairly easy. I'll also second the show notes thing. I used to try and, when we first started doing it, I used to try and make really intricate show notes, and then I was just like, I don't enjoy this, so I'm just going to put a list of the albums and a few other words.
I came to both of these podcasts as kind of like my third and fourth podcast that I started doing. So I've been doing podcasting for a while already. The editing side of it for me takes nothing. Show notes for me for Best Episode Ever are about as minimal as you could get. We talked about this show, linked to the Wikipedia page. And literally as we're podcasting, that's what we're looking at is the Wikipedia page. And we all know, I think there was no plan to go there. It's just, it makes sense. We all go there, so we all start talking the same stuff. The biggest challenge to start when you involve other people, and I don't know if you're planning on doing it with others or just by yourself to start, it's coordinating. It's coordinating the time. It's getting people who can actually sit down for half an hour or an hour, catching them on that day, make sure they're not running late. If you're doing it over Skype, for instance, which is how I do both of those podcasts, ever since Microsoft bought Skype, I don't know what it is, but it seems like either through popularity or not, Skype keeps trouble with the calls and the connections are getting worse and worse and worse. I mean, we're thinking of moving in some cases in another podcast I do to just Google Hangouts because that's actually gotten better, whereas Skype's gotten worse. Depends on time of day as well. But lining up people to say that, you know, Diane's out in Vancouver, so that it's 10 p.m. here, it's 7 p.m. there, she just got home from work, I'm just before I'm going to bed, and we've got this hour where we can line up to do this podcast. That's the key. Doing the ones that I do by myself, well, that's easy. Whenever I feel like it, I sit behind the mic and record. But getting multiple people lined up, and when I tried to do Best Episode Ever and line up a different interview every week, like Ryan does, it fell apart after half a season. Because it was just too much work to line up people and then try to get them together and then try to get them to show up and all of that stuff. You're just more personable than I am.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, not 200 problems, though, which I find are the biggest. And they do get easier in time, and they're very connected, and they're kind of along the lines that you were just talking about. One of them is audience, and the other one is convincing famous people sometimes to come to your show. Because I find the scheduling, I mean, I just interviewed somebody from Singapore, and that was a pain in the butt because it's a 13-hour difference. So I had to do 8 a.m. here to be 9 a.m. for her there.
Yeah.
I mean, 9 p.m. for her, right? But the point is that they have to see something in your show for them to actually invest that time and do the interview with you. So you have to sell them that idea. You have to convince them, and probably they've never met you.
Right.
And the other thing that's connected to that problem is you have to have an audience. So I would imagine for me it was, especially in the beginning, the first 10 or 20 episodes, audience I find is the hardest thing of all. Like getting a substantial amount of people to actually listen to you and care about you and get involved. So, and it does get better, because once you get more audience, then more
well-known people are willing to come, and it's kind of like a reinforcing circle, but in the beginning, to break that moment, it's really hard.
I still don't think we have an audience.
Okay, there was...
We don't measure.
The second hand we had booked was... I thought it was over here, but I'm willing to come over to... Was it back, Brent?
Yes, I had a question about, I guess, for
okay.
When you guys do your show, do you tend to pick, like, one subgenre of music and like, do you have a problem with clashing multiple genres? I'm thinking of starting a new podcast, and my co-host and I tend to have... there's some things that we like in common about music, but I can see a lot of variation in our tastes, and I'm worried about clashing genres and not being good for the audience. Mm-hmm.
We definitely clash genres within a show, and we don't worry too much about. We don't worry too much about the audience. We do get downloads, and it's not a lot. It's not a substantial number. By far, it's not even. I think we get about 50 a month, which we're okay with that. Whether they
here
listen,
come the banner ads.
Yeah. Whether they actually listen or whether they just download them, I don't even know.
What he's not telling you is it's four or five of us that he's paying to download.
That's kind of the reverse of banner ads.
But it might be a horrible question, but who are you trying to reach? Like, are you if you're trying to reach an audience and think about who's listening and think about what they want to hear, or are you just trying to share your love of a particular piece?
Yeah, we're still trying to define exactly what our format is. So
it's going to be easier if you're just trying to share your love for something.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how we approach it too. Is that We all have diverse tastes, and we're trying to reach other people with diverse tastes. If we wanted to just reach metalheads, like one of our co-hosts is big into metal, we would just talk about metal. But that we branch out, and we would try and expose each other to different things, and that's what we want to do with listeners as well.
And I know Anthony's favorite term is the long tail.
Oh, yeah.
But that is the reality. On the internet, someone will love what you love.
It is. Like, I've always said when I try to tell people about the internet, and when I say it that generally, I actually mean to people who don't quite get it. If your biggest thrill in life is getting up at 4 in the morning and going worm picking, you will find a form somewhere. Worm picking / 4 a.m. / gear / shoes. And you can find out what are the best pair of shoes to wear when you go out worm picking at 4 in the morning, and you will have 12 people in that group talking about it. You go, what the hell is going on? What rabbit hole have I crawled down, or wormhole in this case? Come around.
So back to sort of audience, but more like engaging with the audience. Because I produce one at work, and I don't really speak in it, not yet. But I produce it, and there's a host, and we have guests, 4 guests at a time, so it takes forever to get one done. And we have a rough idea of listenership, and there's a few people who interact, but what would you recommend to like increase engagement with the people who you know are listening, and you know they actually are there, but they're just not chatting back with you or commenting with you or sort of commenting on it, but you know they're listening, and you know they're listening to 75-100%. Like, what? Contests don't work. Contests never work. I hate doing contests. But what would you recommend?
Like, beat them over the head with it. The part of my show that takes the most work by far is the listener feedback, and it's because I have to ask the question on Twitter and Facebook and whatnot 16 times in the middle of the week to actually get enough feedback. It's not that people aren't listening, because I know they are, and I know what I listen to other people's show, and I listen to feedback, and I just can't be bothered to write. It's that point. It's they'll think of an answer in their head, or think of some feedback, or think of a note that they'll tell you the next time they see you. But they won't actually put fingers to keys to do it. So you basically have to almost be belligerent with it.
It is true, and we all do it. I mean, I'm a podcaster. I constantly want to hear people's feedback. Do I ever give it to people who I listen to?
You were pleading on the show. That was great.
Oh, we do that regularly.
That's fantastic.
We do it regularly.
And we're almost at,
I'm going to do that.
We're almost at the point, I think, where commenting is dead.
Yeah.
I mean, it's now... for most of my podcasts, we don't have a Facebook presence because, honestly, we... would be something else I'd have to look after. But for Twitter, I mean, people jump onto Twitter all the time, and that's become the new comment for us. Because, I mean, you'll put out the podcast really like that, and if you want to, if that is good enough to you as a comment, just that engagement, then it's like every other Twitter lesson you've ever learned, right? Then start the conversation. right? As opposed, and actually, you know, I mean, first thing I always do, even I've had people on other podcasts which have just slammed me, like, you know, can't stand what you said, you're an idiot, blah blah blah. The first response is always, thanks for listening, because that's the other one. That's literally the other person who listened, because I'm shocked when people do.
But this is where the numbers actually help. So a very small percentage of the audience actually gets engaged. But in my experience, if you give them a stake, they have to have a stake in your show, in your values, or something that's important to them. Then they would get engaged. And then if you have 50 people, chances are maybe you're not going to get a single comment. But if you have 10,000, that 1% that's actually going to make the comment is going to be 100 people, right? And that's why I'm saying, and it's also, and I'm all for love. I mean, you have to start from there. You have to start by loving what you do. But then you actually grow, because the audience actually challenges you and pushes you and inspires you or criticizes you, and you actually grow and you get better in time. And if you're just, say, talking, if I had locked myself in the closet talking to myself, I wouldn't have made any progress personally. So that's why I think it's so important to get that interaction going.
The interaction is important. I'm on the opposite side of you with regards to numbers, because to put it very simply, I've never looked at numbers because I don't give a fuck about numbers. And that's not supposed to be a sense of pride there. It's not at all, because I understand why people do. There's different reasons why people do it. I'm the type of person where I'm like a Samuel Beckett character. I would sit in my basement and record on a reel-to-reel tape recorder just for the purpose of talking and recording. And if 5 years later, that's all I had was those recordings, it may be sad, but my creative process is talking.
But Samuel Beckett did his plays.
Yeah.
And then the audience saw them.
I'm not talking about Samuel Beckett. I'm talking about one of his characters.
Isn't a question.
I do want to get around, yeah.
Yeah, well, I found that with my podcast, we found that Stitcher is where we get all our comments from.
Yeah.
Seems like Stitcher fans themselves will actually go and find your email address, or if you announced it, because they're the ones that are engaged right now, because they're trapped in their cars and traffic and everything else. They get emails all the time saying, hey, I just found you on Stitcher, I'm stuck in my car, so I'm sending you this email, love what you're doing, hope you're whenever you get your next episode out.
Right. So you're texting while driving is what you're doing.
Yeah.
I guess they're stuck in, like, I get the no-names, like, I'm stuck in traffic, I'm listening to your show.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Nope.
Well, we found that Stitcher is everybody that seems to be on Stitcher, more comments, and I find that our show gets driven by Stitcher fans than anything else.
For a different non-entertainment podcast that I do, just kind of a straight-up more tech politics podcast, we've got a Reddit page.
How many shows do you do? I swear, every time you're talking about a different show.
Yeah, five or six now.
Wow.
Depends on the week. But we use Reddit, and we let people submit links and vote up or down the links for what we're going to talk about that week. And we actually do it at the same time every week, so we live stream it and have a chat room and all of that stuff as well, so that can help. We got one back there, then coming over here.
How do you guys get the word out for your podcast?
Sitting right here.
That's part of it. Hashtags on Twitter have become more useful than I'd care to admit, especially if you're talking about something that is current, that has a hashtag. Like if you're, I mean, a lot of new films when they come out might have a hashtag attached to them. And, you know, you either, they may have value, they may not have value. But sometimes that helps. And sometimes having conversations between the people as they're actually, let people behind the scenes. I mean, I know that we do that. When we're planning the show, we do tons of planning, for instance. There's not a whole bunch of it. But there's nothing which would hurt in planning by firing tweets back and forth to each other public. You know, what do you think about talking about this week? Sounds good. When people start to search some of those terms, they're out there. It's not hurting your show. In fact, if people start to participate that way by saying, you know, oh, I wish you'd talk about this, well, there you go. I'm all for letting people behind the curtain, because there's no great and powerful Oz back there. It's just someone sad sitting behind a microphone. that's the age-old question, really. The other thing I would say, too, when I saw the hands go up earlier, like I said, I was really happy when I saw the amount of hands go up earlier that I saw. Be on each other's podcasts. Like, if you find people that have, like, a similar feel that you're podcasting in, help a brother out. I mean, you know why? Because I know you can talk. or else she wouldn't be doing a podcast.
But at the same time, that can actually turn into its own little circle jerk, which...
Oh, yeah.
That's the official term, by the way. That's part of the reason why I try to pull guests
I'm just saying all the time. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But that's how I've found most of the podcasts I listen to. It's because someone guested on it. I thought, that sounds pretty interesting.
I'm going to listen to their own show. Yeah.
I mean, I've listened to so many, it's ridiculous, but I can almost follow them all back to a starting point.
Coming back to Bob here. Bob, by the way, has the credit of being the number 3 ever podcaster in Canada. The 3rd ever podcast in Canada. You don't know him?
Because
exactly nobody does? Right. That's how much credit he gets for it? that blank look on your face going, no, really? Him?
I just want to talk about just 2 quick points about the comment thing and how to chase that. Comments since day one have been podcaster gold, right? It's like you can put 9 hours into a show, but if you get a comment, But the thing is there's two dangers to that. First of all, your show is getting attention because of what you are. So if you start tailoring your show to the comments, your show is no longer your show. So it's like having advertising almost, because all of a sudden you're losing control. The second thing is, I want you just to any news story on cbc.ca and read the comments.
No.
These are the kind of people that leave comments. And that's the danger. So not only are you're diluting your show, you're catering to people who have nothing better to do than comment on this stuff. Stay to yourself, stay to what you're doing, and keep your show for you.
But that's your audience, right? Different shows have different audiences, and some audiences can be more constructive and more productive and more creative than others. So it's about the niche you choose, right?
But
so maybe the CBC.ca or whatever show you're talking about has that kind of a slice of the niches. But that doesn't mean that all the people all out there are all the same. Yeah. Just that it tends to attract these kind of people making these kinds of comments.
And a lot of times it becomes about, and how many times do we go back to this word? It becomes about community. As opposed to just that single interaction, it becomes about community. How well, you know... Is this somebody who comments back all the time and you actually have an engagement with them?
Yeah.
God, I can't believe I used that word too. Someone shoot me in the head.
If you go to watch the Rush Limbaugh podcast, right? Read the comments there. It's insane. Some of those people, they're certifiable, in my view, right? but what do you expect? That's the show. That's the kind of people you're going to get.
I guess the point I'm making is that In my experience, and again, you know, this is all I've ever gotten to on, is that typically, yes, you get a lot of nice comments and whatever. But if it's something where people are passionate about, typically you'll get the extremes. If somebody just says, oh yeah, it's something okay, and I agree with that, people won't go to the reflex of that. But if somebody's super passionate, if it's environmentalism or if it's feminism or if it's politics or whatever.
Harry Potter.
I got kicked off my own show for that, dude.
Didn't your wife take it over?
Yeah. My wife and 2 friends took over the subsequent Harry Potter because they hated what I said about it so much.
Why did you say that made them hate you?
I didn't like it. It's not a movie. It's half a story. And they soaked me for $13 for half a story that has no conclusion.
Is it like a tenth of a story? Think about
it. Yeah, something like that. It doesn't have a beginning, middle, and an end. It's a great big arc with nothing. And not only did that throw off my guest, but everybody who heard it thought I was nuts and whatnot. So they said, we're taking over your show. I was like, okay, here you go.
I found the first Hobbit movie was kind of like that.
Well produced,
but it kind of...
Well, yeah. Anyway. It's essentially when you watch Clerks 2 by Kevin Smith and you see the description of what The Lord of the Rings was.
Yeah.
It's just 2 guys walking for 3 straight movies.
But the funny thing about that was, at the very least, like it gave me a different show. Like the one constant in my show is me. So I'm constantly thinking, what can I do to make this different? What can I do to improve this? I'm constantly tinkering with the whole thing. And I'm like, fuck it, I'll sit it out. Yeah. And it turned out to be a great show.
Jimmy Kimmel with the...
We got another question over here. So.
Yeah. Well, like, Clover, what you sort of touched upon, like sometimes what you would think is like a potential disaster for your podcast turns out to be one of the best shows you've done. So I'm just wondering, like going down the panel, it's just like, what was like the one kind of like one potential disaster that happened during one of your podcasts and it turned out to be fantastic? Like, I can tell you there's a time when We had I just recently graduated from Ryerson from Radio Intelligent Arts, and we had a Canadian all about Canadian independent music, and we had Holorado and Sandman Viper Command. They came in, and they were just doing this acoustic set, and we had this interview, but they pretty much Holorado went on for 30 minutes about Chad Kroeger's boogers. They just went on for 30 straight minutes. We tried to bring it back, and they just kept going on and on about it. But it was honestly, it was like one of our most listened to shows. It was pretty amazing. But for you guys, though, what was like a potential disaster that kind of turned out to be amazing?
So just to turn that question on its head, earlier I said the high point for me with our podcast was getting to interview Jane Espenson. Do not listen to that episode. It is horrible. It is absolutely horrible. We had Skype, so we had Jane and Cheeks both through Skype. We weren't set up very well to do Skype calls, so they couldn't really hear me if I said anything, so I basically didn't say anything at all, which is also fine because it was Jane Espenson and I was kind of doing this the whole time. which is good because you couldn't see me. But they couldn't even really hear Nick very well when he was asking questions either. So it was just a technical disaster. It was horrible. Horrible, horrible, horrible. So, but I still count it as, to me, it's just like, oh my God, we got to talk to Jane Espenson. So it's almost kind of the opposite, right? Obviously, I'm not really in this for the audience. Because my personal high point is the worst episode we ever
released. Here's how your audience can help you. Imagine if you could get an interview like that once a week with the most incredible people around the world and go and be invited in the most amazing places for free. Wouldn't that be amazing for you? Forget about your audience.
Not for me.
Right?
Frankly, no. They could call in. I don't
want to
go see them.
the serendipitous disaster, Ryan.
Skype is the bane of my existence sometimes. the cool thing about my show is I've talked to people, like movie fans from all over the world. My episode that goes up tomorrow night, my guest is from Trinidad. The one that goes up after that, my guest is from India. The worst Skype experience I ever had is I get the same girl every year to do the Oscar show because her Oscar knowledge is just insane. And not this past one, but the one before in 2012, Skype started cutting out in increasingly quick intervals. So we got 20 minutes, and then it dropped, and then 5 minutes, and then it dropped, and pretty soon it was cutting out every 2 minutes. I stitched it all back together, and it took like the most amount of work ever. Strangely, that is my most downloaded show. So it was one of those things where I did not want to forsake it. I did not want to try another day. And I guess it worked. Yeah. But yeah, that's been my worst.
I'm not sure what I can say about to this point, but I guess there was one where I forgot to set the... I don't know if that's worked out well, though.
It's a two-part question.
We had a friend coming on as a guest as well, and yeah, the batteries ran out like 2 minutes into recording. We recorded the full episode,
yeah.
And we're like, oh, shit. This thing stopped right after we started recording. So I ran out to the store across the street, got some new batteries, and we re-recorded it, and I think it ended up being better the second time.
That's true. All that Justin Bieber stuff got
kind of...
Yeah.
I know with the podcast that, like I said, I've just recently started doing the retro podcast with Bob and Dave. But the attitude that we bring to that is nothing's out of bounds. I mean, you can start with 5 minutes on a show like Chico and the Man, but then we'll devolve into a Match Game reference, and we'll start talking about Red Fox, and we'll start talking about whatever we go to. But nothing's out of bounds. When I started doing the show with Diane TVA, that was a bit more structured. But it almost goes back to what she said off the top, the reason why you started doing the podcast, which because of the person that you're having the conversation with. I honestly believe that if I did a podcast with Diane about anything, I would get the same level of enjoyment out of it. So now, every couple of weeks, like she would have her cat walk across her desk and start batting her microphone like while we were recording. But run with it. And like she would like knock a glass over and it's like, what are you drinking? And I found out that she used to have she would have like 3 drinks in front of her on the table every time she podcasted. She usually have a glass of wine, something called, who here knows what rooibos is?
I love rooibos.
Oh my God, you're all freaky people. Yeah, she's trying to tell me what it is. I'm like, what the hell is that? I don't drink tea or coffee.
It's a sucky tasting tea.
Yeah.
I love women.
See? Now we're going to get a fight here. And then she usually has sparkling water, which is like a redundancy to me. But so what I've actually done now, I created a stinger, which I put in post, which takes no time whatsoever. It's like a 9-second stinger. The beverage update stinger. And every week when we start the podcast, I go, so Diane, give us the beverage update this week. And she tells us what she's got in front of her. I mean, that just happened from, like, just genuine conversational moments. And the content is incidental to the people who are saying it, I think. Like, I would listen to these people talk about what they love more than caring about what the specific thing was. Like, if you decided to do 52 straight episodes on Empire Records, I'd be fine with that.
Oh, don't challenge me.
That would be good.
I'll do it a scene at a time, dude. Well, funny you should say that, because I listened to your shows this week to kind of get ready for this, and I have never watched a web series, like, not an episode of anything. I know nothing about it. But I was enjoying listening to you two talk and spread your passion. I said earlier, even just the haphazard beginnings of your show, of, oh, are we recording? Holy crap, we've gone 5 minutes in. You mentioned, I think it was you, last year, said, we're talking about the TV show, the short-lived TV show, Luck, and about how, you know, you'll watch a show, no matter what it's about, if it's told well. And yeah. I think that's the thing. If you're listening to a good conversation, even if you're not terribly invested, you can latch on to what the people are talking about and kind of latch on to that passion and maybe get interested in yourself.
We are running close to where we should probably let the next people. Thanks for coming out. Thanks for raising your hands earlier when I said podcast. That was awesome. And you can certainly come and talk to any of us individually as we let the other people in.
I became the color. I became the daughter and the sun when the feet.
So, could you hear my nerves? Thanks again to Anthony for organizing the panel. Thanks to Rick and Candace for joining us as well. And thanks to PodCamp for putting on such a great event. If you are anywhere near Toronto, they do it every February, and it's a discussion and information about workshop, really, about all things tech-related, podcasting, blogging, Twitter, you name it, they talk about it. And it's people like me and people like you talking to people like me and people like you. It's a lot of fun. They do it in a lot of cities around Canada and the States, so Google PodCamp if you're ever looking for something to do, if you have a website or a Twitter feed and you want to do new things with it. The voice you're hearing right now, the song underneath, is Becomes the Color by Emily Wells. It was featured in the movie Stoker, and I can't recommend that movie highly enough. Matinee Cast Proper returns next week. We'll be talking about Oz the Great and Powerful. And just before I go, do check the show notes, because I have linked everybody's website, Limited Release, The Zero Check, Best Episode Ever, and TVA, and they're all really great lessons. I couldn't recommend them highly enough. So do check the show notes, listen to their shows, and thanks very much. So one last time, for Candace, Rick, and Anthony, I'm Ryan. We'll see you at the Met.